Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the 21CD podcast. I'm your host, John, and today we're going to talk about some elves of Iceland and some trolls. But first, I would like to ask you for the first time, if you're watching or viewing or listening to this on Spotify or whatever the case may be, if you could give us a like, a follow, a share, a subscribe, a rate, whatever it is on whatever platform you're on, before we kick this episode off, that would be great, because that's really the only way that I can organically meet new people and continue to show up on your feed, and it's also the only way that I can enter the algorithm, and both of those things are really hard to do, and I can't do it without your help. So, if you could, that'd be great. And if you don't want to, I get it. But, yeah, let's talk about some elves. First off, too, I gotta say, I am sorry. I look like absolute crap right now. My sound machine, I listen to like a white noise track at night, and man, I could have sworn it was talking to me. And last night, even my wife heard it, and it was just like some kind of voices coming out of the white noise, and looked it up and stuff, and they say that, you know, like there's the brain is always looking for patterns, and so it finds patterns in the white noise or in the static, and it makes words out of them. And I just don't understand everybody who had an experience with that, and it was like many had negative experiences. Like they were all saying the white noise was always saying bad things to them while they were trying to sleep. And one chick even said that she played it for her baby and she could just hear it say that, it, like out of the static, just a whisper sound, "You're gonna die tonight," and stuff. So I was extremely creeped out, and it took me a while to fall asleep. And by a while, I mean I just didn't sleep last night. So I'm sorry I look like this. We'll figure it out. I just gotta find some way to find peace. But yeah, so let's talk about these elves. So me and my brother went to Iceland about 5-ish years ago, probably, and spent some time there traveling around the island and camping, and it was a really awesome experience. And I wish I knew then more of what I know now about these legends and the lore of the cryptid-style creatures that live in Iceland, because they're really awesome. And you know, I don't want to like I don't know, ever go anywhere for the cryptids necessarily, but Iceland is one of those places that's super magic and you would go just to try to find an elf. And you would go just to try to connect with the beings that connect with nature. Like, you feel like you're there inadvertently doing that when you're in Iceland. And also, by the way, I'm a liar. I would absolutely go out to the woods to try to find Bigfoot. But what I'm trying to say is that you feel them there more than you do other places that I've been, more than other places that I've even seen. It seems like Iceland has more of a heavy fae slash, I don't know, like the category of cryptid in Iceland is so different. They have the trolls, they have the elves, they have a sea dragon. There's this rumor of giants there as well, which makes a lot of sense, I guess, but it's just such a small island. And they have all of these strange mythological style creatures, these very fae-like creatures. And anyway, I'm sorry I'm rambling about it, but the trolls and the elves are going to be the ones that we talk about today. So, the trolls, and it seems like they have a couple other species of... the elves and the... It seems like they have a couple other elf-like species of things there, and they are collectively called the Huldufólk, which means hidden people. And apparently there's 50 different types of elves in Iceland, according to this guy who runs an elf school there. And, you know, I know that sounds kind of funny, but this guy is actually, like, I've been reading his work, and this guy, Magnus Skarfadensen, sort of the headmaster of this Icelandic elf school, is a G. Like, he's a certified elf expert and an expert on Icelandic myth of the highest caliber. This dude knows his stuff, and he has some crazy stories. He goes out and he interviews people about their experience with elves, and then he teaches to other people as well, which is just such a wide range of research and then presentation, and I really respect it. And he talks about the reason for why the whole world, but specifically Iceland, has sort of fallen away from this belief in elves and hidden folk in Iceland and in the whole world. Because one thing that we need to realize is that people all over the world go through their whole life never seeing anything magical, like an elf or a troll or a giant or a Bigfoot or a Mothman or a Dogman or, you know, a Loch Ness. Like, people, there's, for any one person who sees it, one of these things, there's probably a bajillion people who don't see it. And as I've researched these things and looked for things and found things and been with people who been around people who haven't seen or found any of these things, it's often because they haven't looked for it. It seems like you really have to believe. There's a certain element of believing in these things that brings them to your sight. I honestly believe that, you know. I do believe that it's possible to see these things even if you didn't at first believe in them. And I'm not just talking about the hidden folk or the elves, but one thing that I've wanted to sort of say for a little while now on this podcast is you have to really open yourself to this kind of stuff. And because if you're not going to do that, you're not going to find this content enjoyable for anything other than maybe to laugh at or make fun of, which I get some of that in the comments that I do get. And it doesn't make me feel bad. It just really makes me feel like if you're not open to this kind of stuff, you just don't understand. Because this stuff is out there. And these things, these beings are real. And I'm not exactly sure where they come from. I'm not sure if they come from God or from the devil or, you know, from something else, maybe a lowercase g God, or if they are actual animal creatures that, you know, we as humans just haven't found yet. Like, we just don't possess the technology to understand these animals. But it does definitely seem like there are two things that go on when it comes to these cryptids. And I'm going to ramble a little bit about this. Especially these more mythical creatures like the elves and giants and goblins and stuff like that. There is simultaneously a push for these things to be mainstreamed in popular media, through movies and entertainment, and a complete ridicule of you and your character if you actually believe that they're real. So it's a really strange blend of enjoy them but know that they're not real. And I think it's just really weird time, because that's kind of how they were about aliens for a while too, and UFOs, if you guys remember. And now all of a sudden, you know, they want us to believe that those are real and that we should be concerned about those. But those used to be popular entertainment sources as well, and you were ridiculed for believing in those as well. But now all of a sudden it's fine. As a matter of fact, you're highly encouraged by your government to believe in aliens and UFOs. So what's the difference? You know what I mean? Like, if we're going to believe in angels and devils and demons and gods and aliens, why can't you believe in Bigfoots and elves or hidden folk or trolls? We're not talking about Lord of the Ring elves running around out here shooting bows and arrows at orcs or anything like that. We're just, there might be, you know, little folk out there. There might be, especially in these wide expanses of unused territory in whatever country you're listening from. My wife has a lot of experiences with goblins from South America and fae from the Amazon. And out here, we have different types of creatures. Like, in Tennessee, the little folk in the Appalachians are huge. Not in size, but in reputation. So it's just like but if you're not going to open your eyes to it, if you're not going to open your heart to it, you may never see these things. And I'm going to read you a couple excerpts from this guy, this headmaster of the elf school I just mentioned, Skarfadinson, because he talks about that a little bit. He says, you know, we would be living in a totally different society if the Enlightenment had not started in the 1700s. But the Enlightenment had a terrible price. It killed faith, and faith is one of the glues that keeps civilization together. Not only did it kill faith, but it killed myth and psychic ability. Many people believe in elves in Iceland because we are isolated. The Enlightenment didn't come to Iceland until 1941, when the American army invaded Iceland. Then we had the Enlightenment, and it began cleaning the elves away. And I'm not exactly sure what he's talking about when the Americans invaded Iceland. As far as I know, we never did. But I do wonder maybe if there was some wartime activities going on where the United States did make landing on Iceland. I'm not exactly sure about that. That would be a fun research project, but I'm not going to go into it today. But what he's talking about is this enlightenment, is this new way of thinking of things, this new way of doing things, and we are still in it today. The way life is now, the Enlightenment sort of brought that on, where you're discouraged from believing in myth. You are discouraged from talking to your friends about your sightings. It's now weird to believe in these things, and even weirder to act like they're real in front of other people. And that sort of became, you know, mainstream until nowadays. You know, it is weird to even try to talk about these things to other people. And even on the podcast, I just sometimes find it really difficult to find my words, because I know how it sounds talking about elves and stuff. Like, I know it sounds weird. Excuse me. You know me, guys. Gotta get my coffee. But, you know, that is all... That's all part of it. That's all part of why we don't see them more often. Just people just aren't open to them anymore. The world that they once lived in, where people believed in them heavily, is gone. It's perished. And we have to get back to that old way if we want to see these old beings. So where do elves come from? You know, this was a really interesting topic that I wanted to look at, so I started just researching where they come from, and there's not a lot of information on this stuff, but there is a couple stories, and one of the stories is in the Genesis, in the Bible. God was coming to visit Adam and Eve was washing their children before the visit to make them presentable, and she did not finish before God knocked on the door. So she hid the rest of the children, and when God found out what Eve had done, he declared, "What man hides from God, God will hide from man." So the hidden people came to be. And the story is that basically, yeah, God hid people from mankind, and they became the hidden folk. And it's largely because mankind attempted to hide children from God. It's a really interesting and strange idea. There's this guy, John Arneson, and he writes books on folklore and fairy tales in Iceland. He's an Icelander. And he has collected a plethora of stories of myth and legend about these things. And that's really important when it comes to knowing the history and the story of these mythological beings, because that's your history book. That's what you get when it comes to these things. The days of hard evidence and facts on where to find the elves and all of that kind of stuff is kind of, it's not there anymore. It was very strong back in the ancient Viking days and the ancient, you know, medieval style days. People did know where to find the elves, and they did know where the dragons lived, and they did know where the giants roamed, and that was part of how they lived their lives. And now all of those stories have just turned into myth and legend. So this guy, John Arneson, he talks about some stories relating to the elves. And I'm reading some of his stuff here from this website, Your Friendly Reykjavik, which is a great site for things relating to Iceland. Reykjavik is the capital of Iceland. And John Arneson says, you know, once upon a time, a man was traveling. He got lost and did not know where he was going. Finally, he arrived at a farmstead that he knew nothing about, and there he knocked on the door. An elderly woman came to the door and invited him in. He accepted it. The farm was fine and pleasant. The woman led the man to the living room, and there were two young and beautiful girls. He saw no more people on the farm than the elderly woman and these girls. He was well received, given food and drink, and then accompanied to bed. The man asked to sleep with one of the girls, and it was allowed. They then lay down. The man then wanted to turn to her, but found no physical body where the girl was. He grabbed her, but he felt nothing. Between his hands, the girl was still with him in bed. So he always saw her. He then asks her how this could be. You know, how can I see you, but when I attempt to touch you, I feel nothing. And she says, he should not be surprised because I am a disembodied spirit, she said. When the devil rebelled in heaven in ancient times, he and all who fought with him were cast into outer darkness. Those who watched him were cast out of heaven, but those who were neither for nor against him and did not join the rebellion were driven down to earth and ordered to live in the hills, mountains, and rocks, and are called elves or hidden people. They cannot live with anyone but themselves and do both good and evil, and much of neither. They do not have a body as human beings, but can appear to you whenever they want. I am now one of that group of fallen spirits, so there's no hope that you can have more love from me than you already have. He accepted this explanation and then told others of what had happened to him. So there's another story, another Genesis story of these elves, which is also very interesting. One thing that I do want to mention, when Christianity came to Iceland, a lot of their legends were changed because the Danes, with their fervor for Christianity when they effectively invaded Iceland, they purged and murdered and committed atrocities on the Icelandic people. And like all conquering forces throughout history, one of the things that they did was attempt to rewrite or eliminate Icelandic lore, Icelandic stories. And that is why both of these two stories from Icelandic history on elves seem to say that they came from God. There are plenty of stories that say they did not come from God, but we're talking about Icelandic elves, and this is sort of two different theories on where Icelanders believe the elves came from. And when all you have are these myths and these, you know, these fairy tales, like I said before, you've got to treat them like history books because they are tales that have been passed down through generation and to generation, and they have been saved for hundreds of years. And back then, they wouldn't have been called a history book. I don't think the people back then had the foresight to know that they should be writing more. But today, this is what we have telling us about these things. And that's why, in my mind, these grimoires and these fairy tale books and these books on sort of the mythological past and the mythological realm and sacred grounds and whatnot that we find in these, you know, books on fairy tales, like, I know you guys know what I'm trying to say. These things need to be really cherished and treasured and looked at and treated respectfully, in my opinion. I've studied a lot of Norse, both the religion of Sátru, and which is the classic religion on Odin and Thor and, you know, Freya, all those, that's their religion there, the ancient one. And then I've also read most of their stories. And even though a lot of them are bizarre, they believed in these things. There must have been something to them. Nowadays, it fluctuates, but it seems that in Iceland, about 50-ish percent of people still believe in elves. And I say about 50-ish, and I don't give a hard number because it fluctuates, which I find fascinating. There's some years where it's 70%, and then there's other years where it's 16%. And then it goes back up to 45, and then it's up to 50, and then it's down to 20. I think that is fascinating because it appears to me, you know, people don't just appear out of thin air. It takes people a while to grow up and formulate thoughts and then vote in a poll about whether elves exist or not. So what it tells me is that, you know, over the course of 5 to 10 years or whatever, depending on the pool of people you're taking from, it's probably the sort of same demographic, just slightly older or younger people. And it's taking them, a while to figure out whether they believe or not, but B, the one that I prefer, is that these elves, these beings, these hidden folk, they show themselves differently through time. They sometimes show themselves, they sometimes don't. And when the sightings increase, more people say they believe. And that makes me believe that, you know, I know that polls sometimes work in skewed fashions, but I think it's completely possible that they come at some times and not at others. And there may be years that the hidden folk don't show themselves. There may be years that there's just no idea that they exist and nobody's thinking about them because there's tragedies and there's war and there's COVID and there's all of these things that don't really allow us to focus on the elves or the hidden folk. But then there's years that you can focus on them and then they show themselves. I think it's fascinating. And, you know, in Iceland, even the ones who don't believe respect, because it's part of their heritage, so much so that they will reroute entire roads or move buildings, like construction sites, from locations that are considered to be elf territory or elf homes. There's a road that was completely moved around a huge rock that was in the path of where the road was supposed to go, simply because there was a minor protest about how that was an elf house. And so the road was rerouted. And, you know, the construction team, they said, like, even if we don't necessarily believe, this is part of our heritage, so we have to respect it. And that is such a strange, like, when you look at other places in the world, especially the USA, that's such an interesting perspective and like personality trait to have as a people as a whole. To respect the things that you might not even believe in, that is something that is almost unheard of in today's world. And so the fact that these Icelanders behave that way towards the elves sort of displays a very powerful sort of eminence, I guess, sort of an aura that surrounds the island, a feeling of respect for the things that we can't see and may or may not believe in. Like, that is just, I don't know. And I felt that in Iceland when I was there. These people are just, they're just different. And the way that life is just different. It's raw. It's organic. And they feel the environment very much. The people there are, they model their clothing and their buildings and their lifestyle off of this landscape, this volcanic, barren desert with jutting cliffs and glaciers and mountains and icy blue glacier lakes and extremely deadly waterfalls and rivers that just cut through the cliffs and, you know, volcanoes that are still flowing with lava. It's just, these olive green foliage and just they're very much a part of it. Like it's something that they are one with, and that includes all the myths and legends that go along with the land. We're going to take a quick break, guys. We'll be right back. Thanks for taking that break with me, guys. I tend to go on... I'm kind of a philosophical guy, so I tend to go on rants and stuff, and when I start describing these things about, you know, you have to believe and stuff, it gets really into the realm of, like, manifestation and what you, as above, so below style stuff, what you really believe you'll project, and, you know, then you start walking along the lines of, you know, well, is it real then, or is it just in my imagination? Am I just visualizing things and materializing things and into thin air that weren't there before? And even though I really don't believe that that's the case, especially with cryptids, that's definitely an argument that people use for why creatures like the Hidden Folk and whatnot might not exist. But when I think about these things, I kind of research these things a little bit. And even though I'm not like an official researcher or anything, I prefer my real experiences more than research. I do try to find stuff online that is a little bit more bizarre, that seems different than the usual stories. And yesterday, while I was looking up, trying to find when the last actual elf sighting was in Iceland, I came across this feed about people in Iceland actually believing in these things. And the question raised was, do people in Iceland actually believe in these things? Or is this all just something, purely related to their heritage and they don't actually believe and whatever? And one person replied to the question. This was on Reddit. And they said, no. But then again, you can never be too careful. So I definitely don't believe in them, but I'm still not taking any chances. They're just stories. But I still never answer the question, give me your name, just in case it's a fae, and they actually take my name away from me. I know animals don't actually start speaking and change shape on Midsummer Night, but I'll still make sure I get some dew on my skin and mostly stay indoors after dinner. You know, just in case. So it's kind of like how you always say bless you after someone sneezes. It's not only rude not to do so, but it also just feels kind of weird not saying it. It doesn't mean anything. I get chills reading and saying those things. Like, that answer is just, it's so perfect. It's so perfect because it sums up what believing is. And so essentially what this Redditor is saying is, you know, believing is ingrained in us. And that goes beyond Icelanders. That goes to all of us. Believing is in our code. Believing is ingrained. Perhaps if you don't believe, you're suppressing something. I don't know, guys. Just take a look sometimes. Take a look. So I want to tell you guys some stories of our time in Iceland. And one of them, you know, we haven't even touched on the trolls yet, but one of them relates to these trolls, and I think one of them relates to the elves. And we'll start with the troll one. We were driving the Golden Circle, and which is this famous loop, that this road that goes all the way around the island. And we got to a location where there was sort of a lighthouse, a large white lighthouse on the coast off in the distance. And we parked in this small little open field of grass that you could park in. All around us on either side were what the Icelanders call elf fields. And they're basically jagged volcanic rock fields with elf towers coming up out of the rock. And these elf towers are basically, just imagine pillars of volcanic stone that are just coming out of the ground in bizarre fashion. And they're called elf towers in Iceland. And so you can't really walk across that stuff. The rock is extremely sharp. You'll twist your ankle. You'll break your face. And it's just, it's not passable landscape. Not easily, anyway. And behind us are cliffs. And in front of us, after we parked, obviously, is the ocean. And there, this lighthouse, obviously, is on the coast on a cliff. And off to the right, there is, you know, you can, after you park, you can go left or you can go right on these little foot trails. And left will take you to the lighthouse, and right will take you to some other location. And we look off in the distance, and there's just this one small cabin, just a tiny structure. Like, most people would probably think of it as like a building to put the lawnmower in on park property or something like that. Like, it's just one little structure, and there's nothing special about it. It's made of weathered wood boards and maybe a tin roof, with some windows in it. But we walk over there first, and as we approach, we see these gigantic bones just right outside of the cabin, and they're whale bones. It's a whole whale that has been brought here, and I guess, and the whale bones were completely bleached. So, I mean, this thing had been dead for probably years and years and years, and but it was still strange to see it up on this cliff, because, I mean, if you go right over just a few steps over, you'll fall off the cliff to your death into the ocean. So that was really cool. I unfortunately didn't get any pictures of the whale, but I did get some pictures of the inside of the cabin, which I will put on the screen. And if you're watching on YouTube, check that out. If you're watching on Spotify, sorry, you might want to go to YouTube and check that out. But so we go in to this cabin, we go around to the side, and there's the door, and, you know, the waves are splashing up over the side of the cliff, and there's a mist, and it's, the wind is sort of gushing down from the mountains, and we, so it's kind of hard to hear. It's like this magical experience, sort of really loud. And we open the door and enter, and the sound just diminishes because it's all being reflected on the outside. And the cabin is just, it's a one-room cabin structure, and it's just filled with trinkets and creations and letters and pictures all about trolls and elves. And it's like a proverbial Etsy shop of little creations made for these elves. And there was some altars for the trolls and whatnot. There was a completely, like, troll head fashioned out of a rock, which is fascinating because trolls get petrified in the sun. So I'm not sure if it was believed that this was an actual troll head that they brought back to life, or if they were just doing a project. But there were whale fins and stuff hanging from, I think they were whale, I don't know exactly, whale tails, maybe shark tails hanging from the rafters, and all sorts of drawings and letters and paintings to and about these elves. And what we didn't know then is right outside this cabin, there was what they believed to be a petrified troll, just towering above the landscape. But we came to find out that this was all done by some Icelandic school children, and that they had essentially built this building into a shrine to the elves and trolls in the area. And it was crazy. It was a bizarre, it really showed how deep this stuff goes into their lives. It starts when they are young and they are encouraged to believe in these things at a very high level. Children have very active imaginations, and they can see things that adults cannot see. And so I can't even imagine the mindset that these children must be in, as they're being encouraged to follow and believe in these fairy tales and this legend and lore about these things in their homeland. Excuse me. So, we took some pictures and we left the cabin and looked over at this petrified troll. I've got some pictures of that I'll put up as well, on the YouTube. And it's just this gigantic, I keep using the word pillar because I don't know what else to describe it as, but it's this huge rock formation that is just towering above us. It's probably the size of a 6 or 7 story building. And there's another smaller one next to it. And the story was that these trolls were in the ocean. I can't remember why exactly, but they were in the ocean for some reason, and they were trying to get back to land before the sun rose. And it unfortunately, or fortunately for us, beat them before they could find cover in the hills. The sun rose and they were petrified there on the coast. And trolls are, in Icelandic lore, they're like the children of Loki. They're very, they're tricksters, and they like to play games that aren't very fun for anybody except them, and they cause havoc and chaos. And that's why I say maybe it's fortunate for us that they got petrified. But we climbed up on top of this petrified troll and just looked out over the ocean, and it was just a crazy, magical moment for me. If you ever get the chance to climb on the back of a petrified troll, I highly encourage you to do so. And I also highly encourage you to go watch that movie Trolls. That's I think it's a Norwegian film, and it's regarded as an actually surprisingly accurate presentation of trolls. So check that movie out. It's like a documentary style film, and it's awesome. And anyway, so that was one of our first big experiences with the sort of mythology of Iceland, like us experiencing it personally. There were other things as well. The Icelandic people leave little houses, like mock houses, all over the landscape for elves. And I'm talking about actual, like they look like little houses, built into the landscape or just randomly placed for the tinier species of elves. And there's entire locations dedicated to both trolls and the hidden folk, all over the island that you can visit. And we didn't do a lot of the tourist stuff, so we kind of only hit the ones that were not touristy. And those are usually the ones that you don't know where you're standing until you find out later. But that was a cool experience. And it sort of, though, pales in comparison to the next experience that I'm going to tell you about, which, unfortunately, my brother is not here to assist me in telling this story because it is a shared experience, and he experienced his own things, but we kind of, we both had a very similar experience. So we were going, it was almost the end of our trip, and we were on our way back to Reykjavik. And there's this national park, it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it's called Thingvellir National Park in Iceland, and obviously, and this location had been used like essentially since 900 by the Vikings for the resolution of conflicts. They would come here, it was basically their open-air courthouse where they would solve the problems that they had amongst each other and vote for things and do things like the All-Thing, which is, you know, sort of like an early democracy. And when they established their official democracy as Iceland, they did it there as well. And that was many years later. And other things they did here were more brutal. When Christianity was brought to Iceland, there were executions here, ranging from burnings to beheadings to throwing people off of cliffs to bludgeonings and the most famous drownings, because there's a river that flows through Thingvellir. And I'm going to try to paint a picture. It's kind of difficult, but if you can imagine a cliff, Thingvellir is a canyon. So it's a smallish type of volcanic canyon. So there's this specific location where they did these drownings. It's called the Killing Pools. And there's a path that runs adjacent to the river. So if you're walking on the path, you're walking along the river. And just imagine that the river is on your left side. And it's not a huge river. It's not like the Mississippi River or anything like that. But it is a healthy river that flows and has rapids and waterfalls coming off of it. And also waterfalls coming from the top of the cliff that is on the left side of the river. There are smallish waterfalls that will feed the river from the top of the canyon. So you're walking along the path, and the river is on your left side. And on the left side of the river is a cliff, a very sharp cliff with elf towers on top. And kind of like I already mentioned, these elf towers are these sort of volcanic pillars that are very strange in shape and size and fashion. And they're not everywhere on top, but they're here and there. And to your right, down below a way, is a small replica town. Just a couple buildings, a church, a graveyard, a couple houses. Just replica. Nobody's using them anymore. And there's also a branch of the river that sort of flows down that way as well, and bottoms out in the valley and becomes more of a trickling stream. And where that stream branches off of the river, there's a bridge that you walk over. And this is where the killing pools are. And these killing pools are where the river sort of mellows out. It calms down a bit. Crystal clear black water. It's the strangest sort of thing. It's just crystal clear, but you can't see the bottom. And the water is frigid. It is freezing cold. This is a glacier river, and it is just absolutely freezing. And they would essentially have a chain or a rope on one end of this pool, and it would extend to the other end of the pool. And those being executed in the killing pools would have their necks affixed to this chain or rope, and they would slowly be dragged through the water from one end to the other, and they would drown. They would go in alive with their hands bound, and they would be pulled across the killing pool, and that's how they would meet their end. They would drown in the process and come out the other side not alive. And these killing pools, as you can imagine, are notorious. There's a certain energy that we felt in this area, and unfortunately this specific location, this national park, since it is a World Heritage Site, it is a tourist trap. And that was very tragic. We're talking thousands of people walking this trail while we were there, throwing coins into the killing pools, a literal treasure trove, probably thousands upon thousands of dollars worth of Icelandic coins littering the bottom of the killing pools. And in hindsight, it's really fascinating, because I was having this discussion with my brother how people can feel the energy of a place and not know how to respond, and have sort of inadvertent responses to an energy that they don't even know they are reacting to. And there's so much water all over Iceland, and, you know, rivers and streams and lakes and glacier ponds and the ocean, and all of these locations, I never saw any coins. But here, this pool has become a place where everybody throws coins. And it just makes me wonder what energy is at work there. The Mid-Atlantic Rift sort of is in this area as well, which is one of the, I think, two places where you can actually observe the tectonic plates drifting apart, and you can dive down in between them. It's a tourist thing that you can actually do. I'm not even joking you. And it's all the volcanic activity, the legends of this area, the spirits that may be left behind, which are a huge part of Icelandic myth. There is a lot of energy at Thingvellir. There is a presence. There are many presences there, and you can feel it. It is tangible. It is almost like reaching out, and the air has a texture. And I do wonder if people's response to this, even laymen, regular people, everyday people who don't even believe in any of this stuff, just felt the urge to throw a coin into this water because it felt magic. And that goes back to, you are ingrained to believe, in my opinion. Anyway, I'm trailing off, but we got the idea that we wanted to come back here when there were no people. And what better time to do that than in the middle of the night? So this is basically the recipe for a great horror story, which is sort of what it becomes. Thingvellir has a designated camping ground. It's one of the few places, I think the only place, that we actually camped in a legit campsite in our entire trip in Iceland, because Iceland has that open range law where you can pretty much camp wherever you want as long as you're not impeding on somebody's business or crossing fences or, you know, ruining any crops or harming livestock. You can pretty much camp anywhere. But Thingvellir, we camped at an official campsite, which was free, of course, because Iceland's awesome. And we waited for nightfall. We were with two companions, and they were less adventurous than we were, so they didn't have any interest in going on a walk in the middle of the night back to the killing pools. Didn't really tickle their fancy, you could say. So my brother and I, AJ and I, decided that right around midnight one was a good time. We had had some dinner and the temperature was dropping. It didn't look like it was going to rain, so we just set out. And we're there in September, so it is brisk. It's getting to the point where winter is starting to think about coming in and taking over things in Iceland. And we start to walk, and we realize quickly that this is kind of a long walk. It's about a mile and a half, 2 mile walk to the Killing Pools. And after a while, we finally get close, and there's this grove of trees that we don't remember encountering during the day, which is fine. Sometimes you miss things, but this grove of trees in the night stood out because they're pine trees, and it's not a forest, but it's big enough that in the night you could get lost in, because it's pitch black. We enter the grove, and another thing to realize is trees in Iceland are very rare because all the Vikings cut them down. So when you find yourself in a small forest in Iceland, you are probably amongst the old trees or trees that have been replanted, and it, you know, to bring life back to Iceland. And it does feel like, it did feel like these were old trees. We were in there and it was so dark we couldn't see our hands in front of our faces. We couldn't see each other. And we weren't walking with flashlights or anything like that because we didn't want to be noticed walking through the park in the middle of the night, just in case there were other people around. So we decided that, you know, it's just too dark. If we were being stalked in the woods, there would be no way that we would even know until it was too late. It was deathly silent in there. And we decided to move to the edge of the forest and walk along the tree line and make our way to the pools that way. So that's what we did. We walked one or two trees in the grove along the outskirts until we made it to this clearing. And from the clearing, we were able to find the path that led to the Killing Pools. So we're walking, and this is about where the cliffs start to manifest. Remember the cliffs I told you that were on the left side as you walk by? Now they're on the right side because we're coming from the other direction. So off over here, the cliffs are jutting out of the landscape, you know, size of a 5 or 6 story building, just a wall. And I think I have some pictures of that too that I'll post, but if not, I'll rip them off of Google for you. But the river is also on your right side then, because it flows along the cliffs, and we're walking along and we can hear the river, and it's very dark out. I don't remember seeing stars, but I remember there being just very little light in the sky. And as we're walking, we're almost to the pools. And like, when I say almost, like we're maybe 10 yards away from the pools, and I start to feel something. Like on the back of my neck, I feel this prick, and I then start to feel it all over my body. And I just, you know, we continue to walk. We're at the pools now, and we stop and we just look at the pools. And it's just this black mass. Like, you cannot see it. You cannot see the water. You can hear it. You can feel the cold coming off of it. But it is pitch black. And I'm still feeling this feeling all over my body. And AJ is starting to act weird too. And I'm just like, dude, do you see that? And I'm looking up at the top of the cliff. And I could have sworn that I saw something dash from one elf tower to the next, from one rock outcropping to the next. And it horrified me. So I pointed and I was like, dude, do you see that? And AJ looks up, and we're like, we're whispering to each other at this point. Like, we're not moving at all. And AJ looks up at the cliff top, and he starts to see it too. He starts to see these things. And it became apparent that there were many of them. And we have different opinions on how many there were, but we both agree that it was a handful of them. And in my opinion, it was somewhere about a dozen of these things were just, and you could actually watch it happen. They were running from rock outcropping to rock outcropping, from elf tower to elf tower, just dashing real fast. And then they would stop, and they would like peer out from the side of these things down at us, like something creeping out from behind a tree. Like, it would just move its body as so you can only see its head and its shoulders and its neck, just kind of like the silhouette just looking at you. And we just stood there watching this for several minutes because we were essentially petrified like these trolls. We could not move out of fear because it was apparent that no matter what it is, we are outnumbered, and we are out here in the dark with no defense, no flashlights, no idea what to even do, 2 miles from our campsite, and there's these things with the high ground staring down at us, watching us here at these killing pools in Iceland. And it was just this horrifying. It's one of the most scared I've been on my travels, because it was just this feeling of we're not where we're supposed to be. We're not where we should be. And these things know we are here. So slowly we start walking away back the way we came. Very slowly. You know, we're trying not to make any sound whatsoever. And as we're walking out of our peripheral vision, we can just see these things along the cliff top sort of still dashing from here to there and you know, jumping along the cliff top and moving effortlessly and silently on the cliff. And we get to the grove of trees and we run. We run the mile and a half, 2 miles back to camp. And we stayed awake all night out there in the camp, and just mainly for fear and disbelief in what just happened. Like, I can't explain it. I don't know what happened. I don't know what it was. I don't know what happened. I don't know why I was chosen to experience it. I'm comforted by the fact that I wasn't the only one there to experience it. So I'm not crazy, but there was something out there. And in my heart, I believe it was elves. I believe it was these hidden folk. So that's my story. That's why I believe. There you have it, guys. I don't know what else to say about it. You know, like, it's crazy stuff. It's crazy stuff. But this is going to go into my own personal, you know, the stories that I tell to my kids and, you know, to you. So you can think of it whatever you want, but yeah, I don't know, just recounting it now is making me feel weird. But listen, guys, this has been a great episode. Had a good time with you today. I have to edit this and get this out as soon as possible. Hopefully it'll be up by the end of the day. And please remember to rate, subscribe, follow, like, whatever you do on whatever platform you're on. And if you're on Spotify, there will be images and whatnot up on YouTube, so check that out. But thanks for hanging out, guys, and remember, don't drink the water.